Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, oh, Anna, Anna, Anna.
America and the world, welcome to Human Design on the Air. I'm your host, Peter Rowe, from loveyourhumandesign.com, and today we're going to get a little intellectual with you. We're going to be talking about the mind, and it should be a very interesting discussion today. I'd like to introduce my co-host, the Reverend Rick, from revrick.webs.com. Reverend Rick, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
And today's show, Reverend Rick, it's interesting. It's sort of an interesting dilemma because, you know, in a way, human design, intellectualizing human design and knowing your design is kind of a contradiction, because part of the sort of core of human design is about living the energy, and we can start to understand it, but we can't live it by understanding it.
That's true. That's kind of like learning how to swim by reading a book. Until you get in the water, you really don't know if you've learned it.
I like that analogy. So it's so true. It's, you know, you see you put anyone in the water, and you know you just have to do it, and that's what really living your human design. And for those of you who are new to the show, what we're talking about is we're talking about the energetic mechanisms coming from your DNA essentially, and these mechanisms are, for the most part, standard expressions that you will exhibit throughout your entire lifetime. Expressions, reactions, the way you act, and all of this is coming from your design. And there's this consistency behind you in your design of how your body, your vehicle, is built to act. And, of course, we have free choice, so we don't have to live that out. But what most people that are involved in human design are preaching is that if you allow your vehicle, you allow your body to live out the energies that it's designed with, then, you know, that's really what the experience you're here for, and that's really allowing yourself to sort of maximize the potential of what you were given. Now, as I said, it's free choice. It's a duality. And some of us may be here to sort of buck the system and try to go against our design or live out other energies so we can, in fact, better understand our design. Some of us, our journeys have been to sort of do that, and it's through going against those energies we start to get a better understanding of exactly what those energies are. But at this point, if you're here on this show, then I think there's a part of you that wants to awaken to what your actual design is and how you can move to start living that to enhance the flow of your life.
And I might even add to that, Peter, just in line with today's topic, how to free yourself from the limitations that we're conditioned to put on ourselves, i.e. the mental limitations.
And that's such a big one. I think especially in, I guess I'd say especially in Western society, and not that I am an expert in Eastern society at all, but I know, you know, there's so much logic and science in scientific thinking in Western society that it brings up this whole question, which I put out there in my blog post, are you in control? And there I'm talking about the deeper you, your soul, your spirit, or is your mind in control? And that mind being in control is so conditioned by our society.
Absolutely. Ever since we're children, you know, from a very early age, we hear the phrase, think about it, use your head. You know,
what were you thinking?
Yeah, exactly. So we're conditioned to truly live in our heads as opposed to anywhere else. And I think human design brings a nice counterbalance to that. And it doesn't take away from the mind. In fact, it gives the mind its proper importance. But it also brings our attention to other areas of equal importance.
And I think, in a way, you can look at computers. It's like, so almost all of us, if not all of us, have a computer at home, at work, or both. And it's a very beneficial, useful tool. But do you allow your computer to make decisions for you? And maybe for some of us, in a way, we do. I think it's probably the mind working behind the computer. But, you know, really that's going to be the core of the show here, is that the mind is an incredibly valuable tool that we have. But when it comes down to human design and living your design, the mind is not an authority. It's an awareness center. It's here to make us aware of, you know, all the possibilities, make us aware of the patterns, help us organize the details. But it's not, in terms of your soul, it's not the ultimate decision maker. And that lies in a concept called inner authority. And we're going to talk some about that today, but we're not going to go into all the types of authority, because there's several. And again, that depends on your design. But today's focus is using the mind as that beneficial tool, but getting out of the mind in terms of not giving it the authority to make decisions in our life.
And that's the biggest thing when it comes to the concept of the mind in human design. It's the ability to understand the real functioning of the mind and not be victim to its usurping of other elements that are better suited for other parts of the chart, i.e. the decision-making. But we'll get into more of that.
Yes, we will. So, Reverend Rick, I'd like to take a quick look at one of the charts on my blog post. So those of you that are following along, if you go out to loveyourhumandesign.com, and on the right-hand side, about a third of the way down, Peter's blog in the blue boxes there, or aqua boxes, click on Peter's blog and then look for the article Mind versus No Mind. And I sort of put that out there as a parody. You know, it's kind of Western philosophy. The mind is everything. The mind is going to, you know, we're going to understand God or spirit through the mind. And then you have the Buddhists and the Taoists saying, no mind. You know, let that mind go. It's about really letting all of that thought and intellectualism go. And being one, being the Om. And it's a little parody there, but what I wanted to do right now is take a look at that first chart. So if you go to that article and you scroll down a little bit, I put the singer Taylor Swift's chart out there. And the reason I chose her is if you look at her mind, and here we're talking about the two top centers, the head and the ajna, And the head is about ideas, inspiration, and thoughts. And the ajna is about processing those and looking at the patterns. And it's really, it's kind of the cerebral cortex or the core processor. It's going to take those ideas, those inspirations, those thoughts, those abstract pieces of data, and organize them somehow, put them together. And so if you look at Taylor Swift's chart, she's got nothing going on in her mind. And I'm not saying that Taylor Swift doesn't have a lot of incredible thoughts, because she you know, produces a lot of incredible music. If you like her music, but what this is, it's just it's an open palette in terms of or an open canvas that with no definition here, she has unlimited ability to think about thoughts, ideas, inspirations. She has an unlimited way of organizing those thoughts, and you know, right on down to the throat. There's no definition there either. So this is a mind without limits, essentially. And Reverend Rick, you want to share your thoughts on this design?
Sure. It's a fascinating design, actually. She's got a very powerful voice and very powerful message, and she's got a lot of potential connections coming up to the throat, although she's only got the one channel directly connected to it. But as far as the mind goes, she is... Do you think she minds? This is a person who is completely and totally conditioned by her environment. All of the thoughts and inspirations that come into her head, there is no innate, uniquely her element to what they are or how they get expressed. They come in, she takes in that energy, she amplifies it, but she has the unique ability to basically take those thoughts and inspirations and do something with them. This is very much she's a manifester. She is supposed to start things. She's the initiator. She is supposed to take this energy and do something with it. And, you know, through her music, she is. But as you said, Peter, she has an unlimited way in which she can receive those thoughts and inspirations. Now, I don't know if she writes her own music or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if she did write a lot of her own songs because of that ability to take in so many different things, so many different mental processes, I guess, from all around her.
And I don't know if she writes all her own songs, but I know she does. And you know, in fact, she one of the songs she has is about being 15, and she wrote that based on her experiences and sort of extrapolating from that on about what it's like to be 15. And you know, and so her design so supports that, because she can, you know, it's like a mirror in a way. If you think of that whiteness in as a funhouse mirror, in a way, that it can reflect what's going on. But like a funhouse, you know, at the carnival or the circus, they have those mirrors that can contort and twist images, and in a way, that's what the white areas in human design are like, because they can take in, they can amplify it and make it taller or bigger. They can sort of twist it in terms of maybe the experience that they're talking about, they're also drawing on another experience that they had. And so it's sort of the melding together of two experiences, twisting. You know, if you were looking for a very factual, true reflection of one thing, this would be sort of a melding or a mutating experience that she might be talking about in one of her songs. but it has this unlimited capacity. And as Ricardo said, it's very subject to conditioning. So as a child growing up, Taylor Swift or anybody that has this kind of design that is very open, and that doesn't mean it has to be exactly like this. It could have a couple of gates in here. But they're going to be very conditioned by their environment. And so, for example, if they have a parent that says, you know, you should be a doctor or a lawyer, and that's sort of the mantra, it's, you know, be a doctor or a lawyer because, you know, for whatever reason, that's the right thing to do, or that's the way to have a good career, or that's a good thing to do for service. But if that's conditioned in them by a mantra, or it's potentially conditioned because both their parents happen to be doctors or lawyers or doctor lawyer or that kind of thing, or that this child with this openness is going to grow up potentially imitating that to some degree, reflecting that in their way of thinking, in their way of acting, and in the way of expressing themselves. And it's not until that child gets out of that conditioning, and I think this is why you see kids go off to college. And one thing, it's a complex thing to figure out what you want to do. But a lot of kids that are very open that go off to college change their minds or change their course on what they want to do because a year or two into college, they've potentially lost the conditioning that they were receiving growing up, or they're not being surrounded by it, so they're not necessarily amplifying it anymore. And they're in a new environment, picking up new conditioning that has a great potential to change the course of their life. So I'd like you to pause for a moment, take a look at your chart, and if you have a lot of openness in the head and ajna, take a reflection right now back to when you made a major change in your life, like college, that you potentially left home and went to live in a new environment. Or for some of you, it may have happened at other times that you potentially, you know, moved and lived with somebody else, or after college you were living alone for the first time in your life. And think back on that. And if you have this openness in your chart, was that a major turning point for you? Did that allow some of the conditioning to drop away and allow some of your own essence to start to bubble up?
Interesting, Peter. You got me thinking about all kinds of things, 'cause, I too have an open head and open ajna. I do have a couple of gates active on both of them. But the centers themselves are open. And boy, you just took me right back to several times in my life where the thought of what do I want to be when I grow up shifted from one thing to the next. And I was trying to think of, you know, what were the environments around me? What was happening that you know, grabbed a hold of my thought processes and had me change like that. So thank you. Very interesting exercise.
You're welcome. And I too was thinking back on I went to when I was a junior in high school, I went to live in Kenya, Africa, for 3.5 months. And you know, I definitely things changed. It's not like I can go back and say, you know, I was going to be this, and then after that experience I was, you know, my career path or my projected career path changed on a dime. But it definitely changed my perspective. And part of that was the experience, but part of that was that my conditioning changed. That I was out of the environment I had been in, and I was in a new environment. with potentially new thoughts, new concepts to amplify. And it's interesting in my thinking about that, because one constant was that I played soccer. And when we were over there, we played soccer too. And I'd always had a dream of being in the Olympics or something like that before I went over. And that continued on in a very strong way while I was there and when I came back, because I had that conditioning. I was still playing soccer. That was one thing that didn't change, and so that conditioning kind of stayed with me.
Very interesting.
And Ricardo, you mentioned that you have a couple of gates in your chart, and I think it would be useful just to sort of review in my blog post. It's on loveyourhumandesign.com. On the right-hand side, click on Peter's blog, and then look for the article Mind versus No Mind. And there's a diagram here in the top of the chart that just gets us a glimpse into how we think differently, or how we have the potential to think differently. And in human design, it's broken down into three types of thinking. And so, Reverend Rick, as you mentioned, a lot of people aren't going to have a chart as open as Taylor Swift. They may have a couple of gates sprinkled in here. I have one gate sprinkled in here. And I think it's important for us to understand these three types of thinking, because having gates defined in those particular channels is an indication of how we may tend to think. And so, for example, I have the gate 4, which is in the logic circuit. And that's all I have in the head, the ajna, and down to the throat. So by having that definition, I'm going to have a little bit of a bias towards tending to think logically, just on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And Reverend Rick, what do you have in your design?
I actually have the two gates that start the logic and the abstract process. The 64 and the 63, they're both in the head. But then I have nothing of any of the other gates until you get to the bottom of the ajna, and then I've got the 17 and the 43. So I've got some logic circuitry there and some individual circuitry. So in that sense, I'm someone who takes in this mental energy and can basically deal with it in terms of whether it is logical or abstract, whether it's dealing with tested patterns or dealing with big picture type of things. But when it comes to organizing it and expressing it, it falls into much more of the logical process. You know, as it points down from the ajna to the throat, it takes on more of a logical process, or the unique insights of my own thoughts, usually the ones where people say, what are you talking about?
And so, Reverend Rick, you want to just take us through the three different types of thinking for those that haven't been exposed to it, so they have a little bit of deeper understanding of what we're talking about here.
Sure. In this diagram on your blog post in red, you have it labeled the abstract, and it flows. It's from the head to the ajna. It's the channel on the left. It crosses through in the ajna, and as it goes from the ajna to the throat, it takes place on the right side of the body graph. So it kind of does that little crossover there. As it leaves. Abstract thinking is more of a big picture type of thinking. It's being able to take in these thoughts and inspirations as images. It's a very visual energy, and by the way, the logical energy is also very visual. The collective energy, I should say, is visual. But this abstract energy, it's the ability to take in these images and sequence them and know, based on past associations, what the sequence is supposed to be. In other words, you're forming a big picture view of things without having to rely on any kind of deductive reasoning. It's more an impression. It's kind of like Monet. You know, Monet has and the other impressionist pictures. Their pictures are basically the precursor to pixels on a computer screen. They have the little dabs of paint on the screen or on the canvas, and as you step back and you see more and more of those images, or more and more of those dabs, the image starts to form. So you get to see the whole big picture. By contrast, the opposite energy, the logical energy, which does the exact same crossover, it starts on the left. I'm sorry, it starts on the right-hand side between the head and the ajna, crosses over in the ajna, and then comes out on the left-hand side of the ajna as it flows down to the throat. The logical process is very much a process of testing things. The thoughts, the inspirations, the energy that flows into there. Peter, you said you've got gate four. That kind of logical thought or logical inspiration flows into that gate four, like you said, and basically the energy there is to come up with answers to questions, come up with hypotheses that need to be tested. And as it flows out of the ajna and into the throat, you know, it's logical energy. It's an energy of logic that requires the testing of the information, of the process, of the formula. Whereas the energy in the middle, it goes straight down the middle from the head to the ajna and straight down the middle from the ajna to the throat. That energy is the knowing energy. It's a very individual energy. And, of course, when you know something, you're the only one who knows it until you share that information with others. And then if they're ready and if they're willing to receive it, then they know it too. But if they don't, they just look at you funny and you know, think you've got two heads, and you just go on about your business and say, well, at least I know. And that's really the individual energy. It's, you know, it's the knowing circuit, and it carries no pressure to test, no pressure to sequence and see a good, you know, see a big picture. It really is just the aha moment that says, ah, now I get it, now I know. And whether or not anybody else knows doesn't matter. You now know. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
All right, so there's a couple of interesting things that I'd like to throw in there, if I may.
Please do.
I mentioned that the collective circuitry is very visual in nature up here in the mental processes. And the collective circuitry is the abstract circuitry and the logic circuitry. So the two on the ends, the two on the outer ends, are very visual types of energies. The individual energy flowing down the middle is a very acoustic energy. And I was looking at this the other night and thought, isn't it interesting how it correlates to the batteries of tests that are done on people to see what kind of learning style they have? How do people process? Remember, learning is largely a mental process. It's taking in information and it's compartmentalizing it somewhere in the brain. And through these mental processes that we're looking at here in human design, three channels exist in the mind, or three flows of energy exist in the mind. Two of them are visual and one is acoustic. And what do you think the top two learning styles are? Roughly 85% of the population are visual learners, and another probably about 10% are auditory learners. And so, you know, that just kind of stuck in my brain as one of these little one of those things that make you go, there's more more depth to human design than would be thought of initially. And then the other little tidbit of information is I came across this, and I really enjoy the way it was presented because I'm a sci-fi buff. I love Jules Verne. You know, I love exploring things in science fiction and seeing where science fiction turns into science reality. And it's been said that the mind, in human design, the mind is a time machine. And I know we don't really talk much about that. We talk more about the thoughts and the inspiration and the logic flow, the abstract flow, the knowingness, you know, all that kind of stuff. But we don't really talk about the timing of the mind. And in relation to the rest of the body graph, we've talked about the solar plexus and the emotions that it carries, the emotional wave that people experience, and how really they in order to be clear about things, they really need to wait, you know, to progress through that wave. We've talked about the spleen being tied to the immune system and being the center for intuition. And, of course, the intuition occurring in the moment and the physical awareness of the moment. So the spleen, timing for the spleen is really now. When we get to the mind, these three channels take a different type of relevance when we talk about timing. The abstract energy here, remember we said was getting that big picture, right? It's an energy that essentially, it's all about creating relationships between the past and the present. As I said, it's taking those sequence of or it's taking all those thousands of images that come into the brain through the eyes and starts putting them in a sequence and in order based on what was known to occur in the past. So there's the abstract really takes us from the past to the present. The logic circuit is a mental process that's all about taking something in the present and testing it to see if you can project into the future. In other words, if it's a pattern that works, it will work into the future. If it works now, it'll work the next time and the next time and the next time, and we can rely on it. If not, something's broken and needs to be fixed. So the logic circuit is the circuit that takes us from the present to the future. And then, of course, that just leaves the knowing circuit, the individual energy in the middle there, which really is all about the instant aha. It's the now, but it's not a continual now. It's the now of the sudden realization. And so what the mind really does is it covers all time periods, the past, the future, and the moment-to-moment aha pulses of clarity, the pulses of realization. And in that sense, some people refer to the mind as an actual time machine because the thought processes are over all time. I don't know if that got a little too esoteric there or not, but I just found that a very interesting area of the mind to think about.
That is interesting.
And when you get a couple of open minds talking about it, you get some rather interesting conversations developing around it.
Yeah, and you had me going there. I was thinking about a lot of different things, and along those lines, one of my experiences is I lived with my brother and his wife and children during my high school from 14 to 18, and at that point, I had an acute ability to recall conversations. You know, I remember having a conversation with my sister-in-law, and we were talking about a conversation in the past, and, you know, the conversation I was recalling was 2 years prior, and I was verbatim, you know, saying what each person said, and I had such clarity about it. And my brother has a defined ajna, and I noticed that after I went to college and moved out of that environment, that I really lost that ability. And, you know, I think it was because his defined ajna, and he has both channels on both the logical and abstract channels from the ajna to the throat. And I think I was amplifying that energy, I was able to recall those memories with such clarity. And and on demand, because he had that energy defined, whereas I do not. And so once I moved out of that environment, moved out of that conditioning, I lost that ability. And that's another example of conditioning. And again, sort of ties into your time thing, because, you know, it was that abstract, probably it was the abstract circuit on the going down from the ajna to the throat on the right-hand side that was recalling the story, those prior conversations.
And that actually brings up a good point here, and that is, you know, we've talked about the head being the center for the, you know, the thoughts and the inspirations around one. But the ajna is really, it's the data collection. It's where that thought energy, it's where that inspiration energy goes to be formulated, to be organized, to be sequenced, to be researched, reviewed, processed. It's both the center for processing and for storing all the data that comes into the mind. And so, you know, with the open ajna, you taking in the energy of your brother's defined ajna, everything that's been stored into his mind, which would then be released in a very fixed way for him, you now had the ability to capitalize on his ajna energy, but in ways that were, I guess, appropriate for you. We'll put it that way. Just to bring things back a little bit to our conditioning, and of course societal conditioning is what I'm talking about now with the mental processes. You know, we're taught from an early age to think about things, and then once we've thought about it, make our decisions based on our evaluations. And one of the things I mentioned earlier was that human design brings out the quote-unquote truth that the mind is an excellent place to do those evaluations. It's an excellent place. It is completely and totally designed for reviewing, researching, evaluating, taking in and conceptualizing. You know, it is the absolute best place to think about things. But as you said, Peter, it is the worst place to make a decision from. And when we think about it, why is that? It's because when we make choices based on our thoughts, and I think we've either done this or we know somebody who's done it, we second-guess these thoughts. We second-guess these choices. We think we've got all the information. We think we've got all the necessary elements to make the best choice that we've got, and yet somewhere we still question. We still think, was it the right one? And so we talk to people, and we try to convince others of our logic, or we try to convince others to see things the way we see things, or we try to explain our knowingness to others to try to get some kind of validation from someone else to make us feel better about the decision, when really what we ought to be doing is using that mental energy for exactly as it's meant, to evaluate things, and once it's been evaluated, then use our inner authority, as you mentioned, Peter, to actually make the decision. So the shift that people would be making is a shift from mentally processing things to somewhere else in the body, somewhere below the throat, to make the choice. It's been said that when we use our mind to make a choice, because of this overall time nature of the mind, when we use our mind to make a choice, we have to live with the results of that decision for the rest of our lives, not just for a short period of time, but for the rest of our lives, because that decision will be stored in the ajna, and it will come back to us over time.
And, you know, I was just thinking that it goes right along with this, that, you know, if you look at the body graph, then the mind is up top, but in terms of being grounded, in terms of being in this physical reality, it's not really in the body. It's above the body. And so what inner authority is really doing is it's bringing it down into the body. It's grounding it, that decision. It's, you know, sometimes joke about people are, they've got their head in the clouds. And while that intellectualizing and that idea, when it's up in the clouds, it sounds great. It sounds sound. But when you bring it down and the pavement hits the road, it's not necessarily grounded. And this is why we need to use the mind as a tool, but we need to bring it down into the body and use the inner authority to ground it.
And Peter, we've got a question out on the message board. He actually, Don from New York is saying, are you taking phone calls? I think he'd like to chat with us.
And yes, we are. In fact, I have a caller with her hand up, so if that's Don, I'm going to put you online in just a second. But for those of you who would like to call in, our call-in number is 347-426-3457. Again, that call-in number is 347-426-3457. And Don, is that you on the air now?
Yeah, hey, can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Hey, great to talk to you guys.
Welcome to the call, Don.
Got a question relating to dreams. But first, let me preface it by saying, different scientists postulate that if you were to travel at light speed, if it was physically possible, I don't believe it is. I don't know. That's my gut instinct. But if you were able to physically travel at light speed, that if you travel at light speed, say, for like an hour, they say that, 100 years or 1,000 years would have passed on the Earth? Are you familiar with this?
Yes, it's again, like I said, I'm a very big sci-fi and sci-reality type of buff there. But yeah, it's because you're moving very fast, but the time passage on Earth still remains the same as it always has been. So in order for you to travel the distance that you're traveling at the speed that you're traveling, for instance, the light coming to the Earth from the sun takes 9 minutes to get here. So we're seeing a delayed light from the sun. Now we're what, 93 million miles away from the sun?
More or less, yeah.
And its light travels at the speed of light, and it still takes 9 minutes to get here.
Right.
So for you to travel at the speed of light for an hour, that's 186,000 miles per second, I think.
Yeah.
That's a pretty far distance. You're going that fast for an hour. For you, only 1 hour has passed. For the Earth keeps rotating at its regular speed. It hasn't sped up. But what's happening is you're traveling such a far, far distance. You know, you travel an hour there and an hour back, or a half hour out and a half hour back. What's happened is there's a shift, a time shift, where you slow things down for yourself, but the Earth has continued going. I'm not explaining it very well. I'm not doing a very good job of it, but
it's hard for our human minds to
Yeah, but essentially you put yourself in a time bubble, for lack of a better analogy, where you slow down time for yourself, but it keeps on going at a normal pace for everyone else.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. What speed do like electrons and protons vibrate at? Are they, as things happen on the atomic level, at the speed of light, or do we know how fast electrons and protons orbit each other and all that stuff?
I'm not real familiar with all that. I think my understanding is that all those subatomic particles travel at near the speed of light, but not quite the speed of light.
Okay, which brings me to my point here. I believe that when we dream, we essentially are able to, our soul or our life being crosses over into another dimension. And in this other atomic dimension around us, this empty space that we see in a room, but it's not so empty. There's a whole other dimension all around us right now. And I believe we can access that dimension. And what I'm finding through my meditation is that like time has already happened in this other dimension. Like people, like, you know, like when we go over to this other dimension, thousands and millions of years, whatever, have passed, or maybe not that many, but, and so I just wanted your thoughts on that, about this empty space around us and how that relates to everything, this quote-unquote empty space.
And I just wanted to,
yeah,
I just want to take a moment, Don, and ask you, have you seen your human design chart yet?
No, first time listening to your show.
I'm willing to bet that you probably have either an open head or an open head in Ajna, because these are, you know, the being able to take in and conceptualize all kinds of different things is very key to that, and of course being able to get involved in pretty much any conversation that comes up is also an element of the open head in Ajna. Probably, you know, not to really get us completely off target here, but what I would say is that scientists right now are studying what they call dark energy.
Sure, the empty space in space, that space in,
yes,
between stars and planets. Yeah, that's not so empty. Yeah.
They started off studying something called dark matter, and then they got into dark energy. And they're realizing, and the reason they did all this is because when they took their calculations and measurements of the universe and the galaxies and all that, they discovered that 90% of the mass of the universe is missing.
Yeah.
What they could see did not account for approximately 90% of the mass of the universe. And so there had to be something else, and so they're looking for other things. And they're calling this dark energy, dark matter and dark energy, and the relationships between them. And one of the schools of thought that they're using, or that's been promoted, one of the schools of thought that's been put out there for people to consider is the existence of parallel universes.
Yeah, another dimension around us, yeah.
Membrane, right, membrane dimensions, you know, all kinds of things, M dimensions, that kind of stuff. So it's fascinating stuff to look into, and I would say, you know, go ahead and look things up like that. But I don't think this is the best time to get into a full blown conversation about that.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to take you off target. Really, my question was, what is your interpretation of dreams? Is it in the mind, or if you've ever done an out of body experience where you can calm your body, you actually see as you,
yep,
close your eyes and there's darkness, and then as you calm your body and your body goes off, but then this light comes on and you're all of a sudden you're seeing this other dimension around you. If you've ever experienced that, you have to think that there's more,
yep,
to dreams than just the mind and rehashing the day's events. I wanted your opinion on dreams.
Right, and thank you for bringing us back to that, because I did want to mention something about the dreams. And you're right, I have had experiences like that. I think probably most people have, because I, like you, I believe there's something beyond the darkness when we close our eyes and go to sleep. From a human design perspective, and Peter, you and I don't think we've ever really brought this up before, but when we look at the charts that we look at, these are known as our natal charts, you know, the charts for when we're born, but they're also charts designed for our wakeful hours. These are charts that represent our daytime, you know, or maybe not daytime, but our conscious existence, when we're up and walking around. There is actually a different chart, a different body graph that relates to the dream time, because the way our energetic gates and centers get activated when we're lying down and sleeping is very different from the way they get activated when we're standing up and walking around. And there's actually, if you've heard of Jovian, J-O-V-I-A-N, Jovian is the organization that Ra Uruhu created. He's the one that really brought this human design information to public consciousness and public awareness. What was it, Peter? Almost 25 years ago? 22, 23
yep.
years ago? Something like that?
Yeah, it started in 87 and it became public, I guess, in early 90s.
Right. So you know, the Jovian actually offers, and Don, you may want to look into this as well, they actually offer a class on what they call the dream rave, R-A-V-E, rave. That's the term they use to refer to the body graph. And that's actually a class I want to take. I'm very interested in that class. It's just not high on my priority list right now. But I would refer you to that because I think it's a fascinating study.
So it sounds like from your answer that our energies at night are interacting with this other dimension. Would you be in concordance with that theory?
I would say they're interacting with something. You know, we are getting activated by something,
yeah.
And I don't. You know, it's obviously different from what we're interacting with when we're awake. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm certainly willing to explore it.
Right. All right.
And I would just add that the core ingredient in human design in how you get your design and the difference between a daytime or an active, and I'm not going to use conscious because that gets us into a whole other, you know,
yeah.
Awakened consciousness and that kind of thing. But when you're active and you're awake, as we call it, in terms of being able to do things versus lying down and sleeping, the key element here is the neutrinos, which are the tiny particles that are basically bouncing around the universe. And as they pass through things, and so for your birth or your natal chart, your design is affected by what the neutrinos have passed through, and that's based on where the planets are. So you're going to have part of your design is based on where Mars is and the Sun and the Earth and all the other major planetary bodies. At nighttime, some of your active gates basically shut off. And so now where you're being activated by the neutrinos is different in your design. But again, those neutrinos are influencing what you do. And so Rock sort of has a joke that because the neutrinos pass through the planet, that we, for example, in America are dealing with the issues in our dreams of the other side of the planet, because those neutrinos are passing through humans that are, you know, are actively conscious and doing things and thinking about problems, and they potentially pick up that energy as they pass through those humans and, you know, and then pass through us while we're sleeping. And I think that that's kind of a joke in a way, but it's a metaphor that we're dealing with stuff, you know, that has passed through other objects and brought that to us. So, for example, if you have a dream where you feel like you're in an alien world or you're dealing with, you know, something that's just very different from our reality, part of that may be because those neutrinos that are passing through you have come from one of those dark matter places or come through a parallel universe or that kind of thing. Does that make sense, Don?
Well, I like your point because it illustrates that, again, although I'm staring at a room that appears to be empty space, like you said, right now there's these subatomic, subneutrino particles passing through me right now. So there's so much more going on around us than meets the eye, as the old expression goes. And I just encourage everybody to have a consciousness awareness about this, about how there's definitely more to us than definitely more to this world around us, a lot more. Encourage people to explore that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd if you haven't read the book, I'd recommend this book called The Field by Lynn McTaggart.
Really?
And it talks about the empty space and everything, the empty space, between our cells, within ourselves, within atoms. You know, most atoms have all this empty space. And she basically weaves through, she's not a scientific writer, but she basically weaves through a bunch of different abstract topics, really, to come up with this general concept of the field, and that there are basically, if we know how to access it, that there's intelligence in that empty space. And I think one of the key elements that she doesn't talk about but is definitely going on, is the neutrino. Ooh. And so I think that's another aspect. But The Field by Lynn McTaggart is it's a really interesting exercise for the mind.
All right. Well, I will hang up and continue to listen to the show.
All right, Don. Well, thank you
for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for the interesting conversation there, Don.
All right, guys. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Well, Reverend Rick, you want to ground us? You want to bring us back to that was great. I love that.
That was. I love these exercises that get my brain to go in different directions. Of course, with an open head in Ajna, it's easy to do. It's easy to take in thoughts and inspirations and find inspiration in the thoughts of others very, very easily. But Peter, what happens when somebody has a defined head in Ajna? Does that change things for them?
Well, it definitely does. And I think the, maybe now's a good time to take a look at the second chart on the blog post. Again, the blog post is on loveyourhumandesign.com. And it is, if you go there and then on the right-hand side, click on Peter's blog. It's about a third of the way down. And then click on the article, Mind versus No Mind. And if you scroll down to the chart at the bottom there, Reverend Rick, do you recognize that name?
I do, but I don't recall who it is.
Well, for those of you that use Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg is the inventor of Facebook. And my wife and I just happened to see it's a movie out now called, I think, The Social Network. And my wife and I happened to see it a week or so ago. And so, of course, my open mind was like, oh, I want to see what this guy thinks like. And I will put the caveat out here. This is the projected chart. His birth time is not known, at least out on the internet that I could find, his astrology charts. And so this is based on the way they portrayed his personality, which I hear may not be totally accurate. This is a projected design for him. But I think in a way that this is, this is a good illustration because, Ricardo, he has the 4323 here in this chart. Which is near and dear to your heart. And so here's a defined Ajna. And this Ajna is he's in this design, he's got an open head. He does have the gate. Um, 61 in the head, and that gate is going to be about knowing the unknowable. It's going to be striving to know the unknowable. I was actually wondering if our caller Don might have this gate, because anybody that has this defined energy, that the energy of the gate 61 is going to prompt them to try to find the answers.
Yep.
And
Peter, if you don't mind my breaking in, why don't you tell people where they can go to get their charts if they haven't already seen one, and that might actually help Don take a look at his chart.
Yes, and I had thought of this when you were talking with Don, and my open head let it go. If you want to get your free chart, you can go to revrick.webs.com, or you can go to my site, loveyourhumandesign.com. We both send out free charts and give you some information to get you started on understanding your design. And but Mark Zuckerberg here in this chart on my blog post, he has a defined ajna. So as those thoughts come in, his ajna is going to consistently try to assimilate those into an inner knowing for him. And that's what he's going to be, that's how he is designed to express himself. It's like, oh, I know how to do that, and here's how you do it. Now, we might not understand it, but as in the movie they portrayed, he basically took this concept. He sort of had an idea for it on his own, and he met up with these three other guys who had an idea similar, but probably more limited in scope. They were thinking about building a social network for Harvard on the internet. And he took that idea and started it for Harvard, but he had a bigger scope in mind. And I think he had a bigger scope of what people would be allowed to put on it. And has since in the last, well, that was in 2004, so in the last 6 years, you know, has expanded to now 500 million people are on the network that he designed. And obviously this is an idea that people get. You know, we talk about this channel, the 4323, as people are either going to get it or not. And in this case, he latched on to something that was very gettable by a lot of people.
And Peter, the interesting thing there is that channel he's got is what we were talking about before, the individual energy, which really doesn't care. It's, I know it, and if you're ready to receive it, you'll know it too, but if not, I'm going to keep on going with what I know.
And, you know, interestingly enough, in the movie, he ended up, these other three guys that he met with ended up suing him. And, you know, there was a whole series of conversations where they were trying to get him to talk to them, but it basically ended up in court a few years later. And it really goes along with that, you know, I know what I'm doing, and I'm just going to keep doing it, as opposed to if, for example, he had more logic, if he had more of a logical definition, he might have started negotiating or behaved differently with these people that had part of the initial idea. But with this design, doing what he did was basically just ignore him. I'm going to do what I'm doing because I know what I know. What happened was the more likely outcome based on how he's defined.
And that brings us back to what you and I normally say, which is that human design really is a tool that helps us understand both ourselves and our environments, i.e. the people we interact with, in ways that we can learn to communicate with anybody as long as we know where our communicative skills, you know, where our strong communicative points are, as well as where our communication weaknesses are and how to deal with them. It's such an amazing tool that covers so many different things. Imagine, we've talked about the inner authority for decision-making. Imagine making worry-free decisions every time, your entire life. You know, the head center is a pressure center, and the pressure is felt as a mental anxiety. Many times that mental anxiety is all about stressing over a decision that was made in the head. And when we release that and use our design the way we're meant to use it, use our energies the way we're designed to use them, imagine what a relief, what an energy of I'm going to go this way, what an energy of peace that's going to be around each and every one of us.
Pretty cool. Very cool. And so to continue on with your question, Ricardo, about what about a defined head, and I'm going to open that up a little bit. For somebody that has a defined head in Ajna, or somebody that has a defined Ajna, or somebody that has an open head in Ajna, and again, so these would be a white head and a white Ajna, but they have some gates in there, we're going to tend to follow or express ourselves where there's more definition. So in the case of Mark Zuckerberg, he's got a channel and a gate in the head Ajna to the throat combination that's very individual. So he's going to tend to behave in a very individual way. Now, somebody else that maybe has more logic, and again, you might want to scroll up to the diagram up at the top here. Somebody has more logic that they have one gate, like myself, gate 4, or they have a channel or both channels, their natural tendency is going to be think about and process information in a logical way. Somebody that has more abstract is going to be more abstract. And if you have a balance, maybe you have a gate in each channel, then you're probably going to have a balanced way. And as Ricardo said, at least this is my interpretation of what you said earlier, it depends on what you're looking at, how you tend to process things. Is that correct?
Again, as you said, with the open head in Ajna, you know, we take in that energy, that mental energy, and amplify it. But when you have these gates activated on the head in Ajna, really what they're doing is they're waiting for the energy to flow into them, into the energy centers, so that it can then get expressed through those active gates. And in my case, my active gates on the Ajna are logic and individual, but my active gates on the head are both logic and abstract oriented, both of those carrying a very strong visual element to them. And so for me, you know, when that energy comes in, I get mental images all the time. I see pictures in my head of all kinds of things. My difficulty is sometimes in being able to relate the image that I see to someone else. But I have a very clear image of exactly what it is that I think I understand.
And that's one of the areas that I think is very useful in understanding, is that when you're dealing with somebody else, whether it's a teacher or a friend or a significant other, or your child, if you have a general understanding of how they think, if they're very logical or they're very abstract, then it can make it easier for you to communicate. Because, for example, if you have a logical child and you try to explain to them how to do things in an abstract manner, they may struggle with that. And so if you understand that, you know, you can give them the step-by-step, you know, if they're a logical child, give them the step-by-step process. It's like, okay, first you have to pick up the clothes off your floor and put them in your hamper. Then you have to take the hamper down to the washing machine. And you put the clothes, you know, maybe you have a sorting, you put the black or dark clothes in, and you wash that, and then you put those in the dryer. So you have this whole logical step-by-step process. And then somebody that's a more abstract child, maybe you tell them a story about, you know, again, if it's about keeping their room neat, you use some kind of story about why it's helpful for them to have an organized room, to have, you know, the clothes picked up and on and on.
Yep.
But again, this can ease things. Because if you're dealing with someone that has a very fixed way of thinking, you need to be flexible to get around that.
And understanding someone else's chart, understanding your own chart, I should put it that way, understanding your own chart is key. You know, it's the absolute foundation for being able to know how to relate to others. And I really want to say, I hope I'm not confusing anyone by making statements like that, but I want people to understand your responsibility to yourself in this life from a human design perspective is to know your own chart, to know your own design. It doesn't matter what anybody else's design is. You don't have to know everybody else's design around you. Knowing your own design and how you're meant to interact with others and to experience your world will automatically set the stage for you to interact properly if you really follow your design, follow your strategy. We talked earlier in an earlier show, Peter, about the magnetic monopole and how it attracts to us all the things that we are meant to experience, to enjoy, to have, to do. But all of that happens, you know, we empower that magnetic monopole by living our design, by following our type and strategy, by listening to our inner authority, you know, by living our design. And in that sense, we don't have to worry about what anyone else is, because we, you know, living our designs will automatically put us in contact with the people we're supposed to be in contact with. And knowing how we're designed to focus or how we're designed to function means we're going to automatically function with, you know, properly with those people.
Exactly. And so if for example, if you have an abstract design, that you have abstract circuitry in your mind, yet you grew up and you heard the mantra, you're going to go to high school, you're going to get good grades, you're going to go to college, you're going to come out of college, you're going to go into business and have a good job, and you're going to do well, and you're going to move up the ranks. Well, think about that. That's very logical thinking. You know, step one, go to high school, get great, good grades. You know, step two, go to college. So it's very logical thinking that you're being conditioned by. And really, if that's you, if you have this abstract thinking, there's such a beauty in waking up, because you're waking up to the fact that you're really an abstract person living a logical life. And when you start to let go of that logic and you start to embrace the abstract, that is when that magnetic monopole is going to start flowing you to the right people for you, and the right experiences for you. And that doesn't mean, because you're an abstract thinker, that you can't do well in business. It's just you would be doing business in a different way. And what you would be doing is probably different than what you would do if you were approaching everything logically.
And as a former school teacher, you know, if I had known about human design when I was teaching, I taught math. A very logic-oriented discipline. But if I had known about human design, I think I probably could have reached more of my students. And I reached a good many of them because of my unorthodox ways of teaching. I taught math as a foreign language. So I took the logical nature of mathematics and applied it to the abstract nature of communication. And I was quite successful with that approach. But at the same time, I know there were still students left hanging in there somewhere. And I like to think that if I had known about human design back then, I probably could have reached them as well.
And I think one of your gifts there was that you have an open head in Ajna, and you have some energies in all three types of thinking. And so that gave you better odds of the meeting of the minds, so to speak, with your student, because you could match and you could amplify the needs in any of these three types of thinking.
Yep. And Joni on the message board says, as a parent, I wish I knew this too. Joni, you're so right, because I really believe, my stepson is now a grown adult. Had I known about his chart when he was little, I think he and I would have had less friction when he was younger. Now that he's older, I do have his chart, and we do know how to communicate with each other. We have not had any kind of friction like we did when he was younger. All the old scars have been healed over, and we really, I have to admit, it's been an absolute pleasure having him here with me. There was a time where I would not have said that. So that's just a brief little testimony to the curative powers of human design, I guess, if you want to call it that.
And I like Jody's comment. She says, what if they gave out HD charts at the hospitals when babies were born like photos? It just made me think, oh, here's your instruction manual.
That would be great.
I love that idea, Joni. Thank you for that. So Reverend Rick and I are going to have to work on that. Maybe we can get a pilot program going or something.
Yeah. Kendall says, didn't we all want a manual for our babies? Guess what, Kendall? Now you've got one.
There you go. There you go. Well, Reverend Rick, I thought we've got about 10 minutes left here. And I thought maybe we've mentioned it a couple of times in the show about the mind is not the authority. Do you want to briefly just cover what inner authority is? And, obviously it's on, if you get a chart, it's on your chart. And we did a show on authority. We probably will do another show in the not-too-distant future on authority, but... do you want to just give everybody sort of a brief overview of what authority is and maybe highlight a couple just as an example?
Sure. There are several different kinds of authorities. Roughly somewhere around, I think, five or six different kinds of authority. And if you look at your human design chart, the body graph that we keep talking about, all the geometric shapes on there, those all represent energy centers. The third one down from the top is a square. If it's defined, it's going to be colored in brown. If it's not defined, it's going to be white. But essentially, everything below that square almost everything below that square has some form of authority to it. And by authority, we really mean decision-making authority. It's the energy that helps us make clear decisions. Now, we can always make decisions based on anything. Based on the mind, based on the heart, based on whatever, but making sure that we're clear on our decision, making sure that we have made the absolute best choice according to our own unique individual design, means utilizing that decision-making authority as we were designed to utilize it. The most common one that we can talk about is the sacral center. You know, anybody out there who's a generator or a manifesting generator has that sacral center defined, and that's going to be the It's going to show up as a red square towards the bottom. It's the second one in from the bottom, little red square down there. And that square is a decision-making authority for a lot of people. Now, there is something that can mitigate that. We won't really get into too much stuff in there, but essentially the sacral has a voice that says uh-huh or uh-uh. So when you're trying to make a decision and you ask your sacral is going to respond with uh-huh or uh-uh. Or it may respond in such a way to let you know that there's not enough information yet, or maybe you haven't phrased the question properly. But basically, being clear about your decision is the power of the decision-making authority. And once you get used to using it, you will always be clear about your decisions. And that's what I refer to as the worry-free decisions. You don't have to struggle with the decision that was made and wonder if it was the right one. You will have absolute clarity that it was. Peter, is that good enough, or should I go into any more detail about anything else?
No, that was good.
Okay.
Good, unless you have more that you want.
Well, I wanted to, as a contrast, I wanted to just briefly, very briefly, say something about outer authority, only to tie it back to the mind again. You know, we keep talking about this decision-making authority, and Peter, you've mentioned it before as the inner authority, and it is. It's the inner authority because it's seated in one of these energetic centers down below the throat. However, there is something known as the outer authority. And the outer authority means it's an authority for others, not for ourselves. And this is what ties us back to the mind. The mind, the head and ajna defined, are known as the outer authority. These are the thought processes that other people need to be exposed to, that other people need to experience, to see. There's a group of people out there that have absolutely no defined centers in their chart. They're called reflectors. They have no inner authority. But one of the things that people with defined heads and ajnas can do is be an outer authority for them, be the sounding board, be somebody that helps them talk through things and look at things differently. And so the mind can be an authority, but not for oneself. The mind is always an outer authority to help others with their decision-making process. Not to make the decision, but to help others with their decision-making process. I hope that makes sense.
It does. It does to me. And we had a few questions on the chat that I just want to address. Somebody was asking about, Kendall was asking, is there a projector? Do they need to link with a manifester? And Cindy commented that she's a generator linked to a projector. You know, and essentially, any type can work with any type, but you want to follow your strategy. So in the case of Cindy, she's a generator linked to a projector. Cindy, you need to be comfortable and inviting your projector to give you guidance and advice. And likewise, the projector needs to be giving you things to respond to. So this is all going back to type and strategy. And the other question, a projector linked to a manifester, that's great if you're invited by the manifester to link or to do something with. But again, it's going back to your strategy. And if you're living your design, if you're living the energies, if you're not making the decisions out of your mind, like we're talking about today, but you're making them out of your inner authority, that's going to put you on the path to if you're supposed to link with a manifester, to be invited by the manifester. Or, you know, if you're a generator, having the opportunity to give a projector an opportunity. Reverend Rick and I have lived this out because I was doing the show alone, and I asked Reverend Rick, invited Reverend Rick a couple of times to be on the show with me, And it became very apparent that we worked well together. And so I'm a generator. I responded to him working well with me by inviting him to be the co-host on the show. And that's when you really hit the power of human design, is when you utilize your strategies like that.
Mm-hmm.
Utilize the strategies of using your inner authority and not your mind. Using your mind for awareness, awareness of the facts, awareness of the information, awareness of the data, but using your inner authority to make your decisions, that will put you on the right path to be linked with the right person, or you know, whether that's a significant other or business or whatever it is.
Right, and I just want to add that in any case, when there's a projector in a couple, in a partnership, if the other person in the partnership is a generator, manifesting generator, manifester, you know, any of those types, inviting the projector to offer his or her guidance is very much appropriate for that type of relationship. But keep in mind that the guidance offered by the projector is not the be-all, end-all. It's not a mandate. Just because that person is a projector and says, well, you know, I think this, or, you know, I believe this is how you should handle the situation, you know, have you considered X, Y, and Z, you know, that kind of stuff. The projector isn't the one who's going to be telling you what to do or how to do it. The projector is going to be offering advice, offering thoughts, offering guidance, but that's exactly what it is guidance. You still have to use your inner authority to know whether or not you should be following that guidance. Because let's face it, guidance is guidance, but there's nothing that says whether it's good or bad. You know, your inner authority is the one that has to tell you that.
And so, just to be funny here, Reverend Rick offers me the advice to go jump off a cliff, and I'm a generator. I get to respond to that, and I can laugh, or my mind can say, well, it might be kind of fun on the way down. You know, but I have to go back to my inner authority, and, you know, and that's, for me, I'm an emotional sacral being, so the first thing is saying wait, because my emotions, I have to wait out my wave, but my sacral is saying, that's not a good idea for the body. The body will not maybe enjoy the flight, but not enjoy the landing. So, you know, I'm making fun here, but that's really the process that's going on.
Yep. And, of course, my open head in Ajna and my big picture view of things makes me think, or makes me realize, oh, I forgot to tell Peter last week when I told him about jumping off a cliff that he should have a hang glider strapped to his back. Because it's an amazing experience.
And that one might be more repeatable than the without it. Without it. Well, Reverend Rick, we've got about a minute to go. Any closing thoughts or anything you've got coming up here?
Only that there's a lot of things in the works. I have a poll out on one of my websites there that basically is all about trying to put out products that people want to have. You know, what is it that people are looking for? And I'm busily developing things that people have said they want to see or have or learn about. So in the coming weeks, you know, you'll be hearing more about that.
That sounds great. And again, if you don't have your chart, or you don't have a chart for your child or your partner, loveyourhumandesign.com or revrick.webs.com. Next week, our show is going to be on the Open Throat Center. It's all about where the energy comes out and how it's expressed. So it should be a really great show next week at 11 a.m. Eastern, Saturday the 23rd. So please join us. This is Peter Rowe for loveyourhumandesign.com. Wishing you a great week. Reverend Rick, thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Good night, everyone. See you next time. Oh.